Well, good morning, everyone. It's really special for me to be back at Fort Wilderness. We came long time ago. First time up here was 1972, and just couldn't get enough of this place. How many of you would agree with that sort of thing? Amen. Currently, I'm the director of the farm school at a place called Harvest Home Farm. We have a 160-acre farm that we use for ministry just south of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I'd like to just show you a piece of what we're doing. We've got a short video, and if you'll run that now, we'll tell you all about Harvest Home Farm. So we would invite you to come and join us at Harvest Home Farm. I just wanted to share that with you this morning because all of that began here at Fort Wilderness. We came and heard a message. We heard a message that God desires a personal relationship with each one of us. We heard a message for the very first time that it was not our will, but His will that He desired in our lives. Now, I'm sure I had heard that message before, but I had only heard it in my mind, and I hadn't heard it in my heart. I was a hearer of the word only, and not a doer of the word. James chapter 1, beginning in verse 22, James tells us that it's not sufficient to know the word, not sufficient to hear the word, but you and I are called to be doers. We heard that message in our hearts for the very first time here at Fort Wilderness, and our lives were changed. Remember that we came back the second year in 73, and then came back again in 74, and then 75, and 76, and 77, and 78. And during those summers, we fell in love with God's creation. My background is in nuclear engineering. I have no formal training in the area of zoology or botany or any of that. But being here at Fort Wilderness opened up all of God's creation, and we began to look more closely at what God had made. And we went over to Peck's Wildwood. That's over in Minocqua. How many of you are familiar with that? All right. And they got all these animals, and I made a deal with them that if they would let me take an animal in the morning, I would bring it back in the evening, and then I would pick up another one, and I would bring it, and we would do this daily exchange of animals. And so we got a porcupine one time. It was really cool. We got a duck another time. We got a baby fawn one time. And one time, we got a skunk. I picked up this skunk and brought it over here. We were teaching for the youth camps, and we had this skunk for everybody to see. It was so cool, and to pet a skunk, you know. And I took it back at the end of the day, and I was asking about how they descent these skunks, you know, and what the process is like, and started to learn things about skunks and that. And they told me that that skunk was not descented. It had been born there at Pex, and it had been handled so much that it was like a house cat. But it was a house cat that was fully potent. And I'm just thinking, if somebody had twisted a leg wrong or pulled a tail, we could have really had an impact on the group at that time. And one time we got a raccoon. We got a raccoon and brought this raccoon over, and I was teaching about the raccoon and everything as it's climbing all over me and reaching in my pockets. And we talked about curiosity and how curiosity can sometimes lead us into things that are not good for us. As this raccoon is poking its hands through my pockets and climbing all over, it was really cool. I learned how to tell stories here at Fort Wilderness because they had this big yellow and white tent. And it had a sawdust floor, and they had these hard benches. And when the stories got boring, the kids would start kicking the sawdust, and the clouds of dust would begin to rise, and everybody'd start coughing and choking. And then when the stories got good, they would stop kicking their feet, and the clouds would go back down. So I had immediate feedback. Now, you don't get that kind of feedback in a room like this, but out there in the big top, you could tell right away when you were boring everybody. Well, we really got into these animals, and we were introduced right here at Fort Wilderness to a series called Character Sketches, and we had the privilege of working on that series and other things that went along. And now we have our own farm, a place called Harvest Home Farm, and we have the animals right there. And we get a chance to teach about them. And in addition to teaching about them, we've written some books on them. And I just wanted to show you this one that we have. It's called All We Like Sheep. And there's 20 lessons that every parent needs to teach their sons and daughters, because all we are indeed like sheep. And we wrote this and took a lot of the pictures from the farm itself. And then we started recording the teachable moments at the farm and the character lessons that come out, and we put together these CDs. There's 60 one-minute lessons on each one of these CDs, and we've got three of them over here. So that's 180 character lessons from the farm. Each one only takes a minute, and they're intended to be food for thought for your family to discuss. And all of that began here at Fort Wilderness. But our beginning, our first day on staff here at Fort was rather eventful. It was in June of 1979 that we joined the staff here. Now, we had always lived in the city, except when we were staying up here. But we were still really city folks. And there was so much we had to learn about living in the wilderness. We bought a house right across from Ron and Sandy and Tom and Jean. It's just across the bridge to the south of the bridge there. There's a big red barn, and we bought that 47 acres that were there. And I remember the day we moved in. We had a big trailer behind a U-Haul truck, and then we had a van pulling another trailer. We had packed up all our earthly possessions, and we had moved up here. And when we turned onto the gravel driveway that led to our house, there was a great big female snapping turtle about this big around. It was laying eggs in our driveway. I had never seen a snapping turtle like that. I'd seen pictures of them, but never one in real life. So we got out to show the kids, look, there's a snapping turtle in our driveway. And I picked up a little stick, and I poked at it. And you know what that snapping turtle did? It snapped. It snapped, and it lunged forward with its whole body, and it grabbed that stick, and it snapped it right in two. I'm thinking, we better get back in the truck. I was a city guy, and I had a lot to learn about living in the country. We drove around that snapping turtle, and every year, for a number of years, in June, it came back to lay its eggs there in our driveway. How cool is that? I learned to leave the snapping turtles alone. It was the right thing to do. Then as we pulled into our driveway, our house had been vacant for a number of months, and as we unlocked the front door, things went scurrying across the floor and disappeared into the woodwork. And as we picked up one of the rugs and shook it out that was laying on the floor, there was a red-bellied swamp snake that went slithering across the kitchen floor. We had a lot to learn about living in the country. But that first day was not over yet. See, we had two dogs when we moved up here, a golden retriever named Junior and a little toy poodle named Mickey. And they were city dogs. They didn't know anything about living in the country. But we had just let them run because at home in the city, we couldn't let them out because there were cars and all sorts of dangers out there. But we're thinking, hey, we're in the middle of the wilderness, you know. What trouble could they get into? What could happen to them? And so we just let them run, and they were having a ball because there were all sorts of unfamiliar smells, all sorts of things that they had never experienced before. Well, Lois and I had gotten busy unpacking everything, and time had passed, and it had gotten dark. And we hadn't realized that it was so late, and Junior and Mickey were still outside. Until I heard the most terrible sound I think I have ever heard. It was sort of a cross between a howl, a bark, and a yip. And I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard anything like that. I went to the front door and I heard it again. And I realized it was Junior. And as I flipped on the light, I saw Junior come flying across the yard out there. And he comes running to the door, and he goes right between my legs into the house. And then it hits me. It literally took my breath away. I'd never smelled anything like that before in my life. I was a city guy. And I realized as I turned around, here's Junior. He's rolling and rubbing his nose on the living room carpet. And he had been sprayed full force in the face by a skunk. Now, I'm telling you, he was a city dog. And he didn't know about these country things. We had a lot to learn. Junior had a lot to learn. He learned to avoid things that were black and white. He kept his distance. Even the neighbor's cat would scare our golden retriever because it was black and white. We realized that this farmhouse came with a set of skunks. And we learned that we had to change our ways. We learned that we could no longer put dog food out on the back porch. Or if we did feed the dogs outside, we had to remember to bring the dog food inside at night. Because skunks will sleep during the day, and when the sun goes down, That's when they wake up and they go on the prowl. One night I was sound asleep when I was awakened by a sound on the back porch. And I thought to myself, "Oh, I forgot to bring in the dog food." And so I was still half asleep. I got up and I went to the back porch to get the dog food. And as I opened the door and I flipped on the light, there was a big, fat, black and white skunk right there on the back porch. He was looking at me, and I was looking at him. And then that skunk started to click its teeth. See, I had learned about skunks that they will click their teeth before they spray. I'd learned that when we had the skunk over, you know? And they told us, now if you watch that skunk and listen to it, because if it starts clicking its teeth, it's ready to spray. Now, I knew that. And what I should have done was to just slowly shut the door, turn out the light, say, "Good night, Mr. Skunk. I should have let him have the dog food." See, I knew the right thing to do, but I didn't do it. Instead, I just kept looking at that skunk, and he was looking at me, and he starts stomping his feet, because that's what skunks do. They will stomp their feet before they spray. I knew that. Here's this skunk, he's clicking his teeth and he's stomping his feet. And he's looking right at me. I knew the right thing to do, but I didn't do it. I was a hearer of the word only, and not a doer. I looked at that skunk. That skunk, he's looking at me. I should have just slowly shut the door, turned out the light, said, "Good night, Mr. Skunk." I should have just let him have the dog food, but I didn't do it. I'm looking at this skunk, and pretty soon he turns around, and he raises his tail, And I knew that a skunk, if it raised its tail, it was getting its tail out of the way so that it could aim its sprayer. They got a powerful sprayer. There's two bulbs in the back there that compress and can shoot out this yellow sticky liquid up to almost 10 feet. And I was just like 3 or 4 feet away from this skunk. I got a really good look at his sprayer. And when he lifted that tail, I knew that he was warning me. You know, they got this big, big tail, black and white stripes on it, and it's easy to see, and I'm looking at it right there. And what I should have done was to slowly shut the door, turn out the light, say, "Good night, Mr. Skunk." I should have just gone back to bed and let him have the dog food, but I didn't do it. I was a hearer only and not a doer. I'm looking at this skunk. He turns around to aim. And I thought to myself, I've got to do something. But I did the wrong thing. I slammed the door. Scared that skunk half out of its wits, and he sprayed the whole side of our house. It was summer, and the windows were open. And I had to face my wife, because I knew the right thing to do, but I hadn't done it. Oh man, we'd go to church and have to sit in our own pew because nobody else would sit with us. We eventually had to rip out the carpet in the living room because any time it got to be human again, all of that smell started coming back, and I had to do something about these skunks. So I went to the book of authority, a book of authority about skunks and what to do with the skunk. First of all, it said don't leave your dog food on the back porch. But then it described very clearly how you could trap a skunk. Said you had to get one of these little box traps with doors on both ends. And you had to get one just the right size so that when the skunk was trapped on the inside of this little live trap, that it couldn't raise its tail. Because if the skunk couldn't raise its tail, then it wouldn't spray. I mean, after all, the skunk doesn't want to spray itself, because who wants to smell like a skunk? Now, I had gotten a real good look at this skunk, and I knew just how big it was, and so I got just the right size trap, and I put it out on the back porch, because that was the right thing to do, and I put some dog food in it, because I knew that those skunks like dog food. Well, the very next morning, I go out there, and I'm all excited, and that trap is sprung, and I'm looking at it, and there's a big, fat, black and white cat. I think it was Ron Robertson's cat. It wasn't only the skunks that were eating our dog food. Well, I didn't want the cat, so I opened up the trap and set it free. And I put some more dog food in it the next night to wait for those skunks to wake up and come around because I was going to get that skunk. It was the right thing to do for my family. Put the dog food in there, got it all set up, and the next morning I get up and sure enough, in the trap is a big, fat, black and white dumb cat. It was that same cat caught again in my trap. I was not going to give up. So I put some more dog food in there, set it up the next night. The third morning I'm up in my attempt to trap this skunk. And as I get up and I look at the trap, here is this big, fat, black and white skunk. I had him. He was in the trap. He was sitting there right in front of me. I had him. And as I approached him, I could hear him clicking his teeth. I had heard that sound before. As I got closer, I could see him struggling to stomp his feet. I had seen that before. And then he's squirming to get his tail out of the way. But the book had said that if he can't raise his tail, he won't spray. Man, I didn't know if I believed the book. I wasn't so sure. I had been in this position before. I had done the wrong thing, and now I wanted to do the right thing, but I wasn't sure if I could believe that book of authority that had told me the right thing to do. The only way I could prove it was to put it to the test. And that morning, I reached down and I picked up the trap and the skunk didn't spray. The book was right. The book was true. I could trust its promises. And the book told me what to do, and I did it, and the skunk didn't spray. But now, I've got a new dilemma. I've got a skunk in the trap. And what do I do with the skunk in the trap? So I quit. I went back to the book. What do you do after you trap the skunk? And the book gave me two options. The first option depended on a choice I had to make. Do you love your neighbor more than the skunk? The second choice was, do you love the skunk more than your neighbor? Well, the book, the one we call the Bible, tells us to love our neighbors. You agree? That's the right thing to do. Now, it's not enough to just know it. You have to do it. So really, I only had one choice. Because we loved our neighbors more than we loved the skunk. And so we did the right thing. We did what the book told us to do. Because you understand, it is not enough to know the truth. We are called to do it. I think of each one who's here. We probably all have different levels of Bible knowledge in our heads. But the reality of our faith is whether we put that knowledge, whatever measure of knowledge that we have, whether we put that to work in our lives by faith, trusting that the book is true, that His promises will be fulfilled if we claim them and we live them. Not just hearers of the word only, but doers. Now, there's a character quality, and it's called responsibility. If you and I are going to be responsible before God the Father, it is a matter of knowing and doing the right thing. And if you would like to know what I did with the skunk, you see me afterwards. And I'll be glad to tell you what it is to love your neighbor more than you love the skunk. For that matter, I'll tell you what you would do if you love the skunk more than you love your neighbor. But the book of authority, tells us to love our neighbor. I've got some books over there and some CDs. I'll be glad to share those with you afterwards. Let's have a word of prayer, and we'll ask the Holy Spirit to interpret these words and apply them right where you are. Lord, I give this all to you. I ask you to interpret these words, apply them in our lives, that we might be doers, not hearers only. I pray for the young people here. I pray that they would know what the right thing is, that their moms and dads would teach them the right thing, and that they would be doers, not hearers only. And Lord, I pray for the adults who are here. I pray that they would know what God the Father, seeks, plans, prepares for them, and that they would be eager to follow as you lead them. And that they too would be doers of the will of God, and not hearers only. May we be responsible before you, and may it be to the praise of your glory. Amen. Thank you for letting me share. Tomorrow morning, we're going to tell a story of the race I ran at Nicolet College, right there in Rhinelander. And you'll find out whether I finished that race or not. Thank you for letting me share.